You're listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Good morning, everybody.
Good to see you here so nice, bright and early. My name's Tom Duval. I'm a senior associate here in the Russia-Eurasia program at Carnegie. We've got a great event this morning. In fact, so great that our opposition here, the Australian Foreign Minister, surrendered and cancelled his own presentation. We're going to try and run until about 1 o'clock or shortly after, which means we'll run until just before 11 here and then have another session, which will be... So this session will be a kind of general session about Islam in the wider region. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit about the North Caucasus, but the second panel will be exclusively about the North Caucasus. So I would also encourage you not to ask questions about the North Caucasus and so that we can have a proper discussion in the second panel. I think the reason for this conference is not so much that anything particular is going on. It's just it's not so much what as who. We just happen at the moment to have a very good concentration of expertise on this subject in Washington, D.C. And Alexei Malashenko, who will be our first speaker, is visiting us from Moscow. And as many of you know, Alexei, there's probably no bigger expert on Islam in the post-Soviet space. Just joined us from France, who was here for 3 years, Bayram Balci, who's also extensively worked in Turkey, Azerbaijan, Central Asia, and he's from Sciences Po in Paris, but is also with Carnegie now for 3 years. He's just joined us. And on my left, my old friend Hikmet Hajizadeh, who's here, I think, just for another week, but has already been lighting up Washington for a few months at the National Endowment for Democracy. I think the subject is almost endless, but what we will hope to do in this session is sort of to cast some light on the complexity of Islam in the post-Soviet Caucasus, its many different currents, Salafism, Shiism, Sufism, Gulenism. In many ways, a very normal phenomenon, the return of religion to the post-Soviet space, but obviously things to watch and be concerned about as well. I will turn over and we'll work from my right to left. We'll go ABH, Alexei, Bayram, and Hikmet. I'll ask them to try and speak for about 15 minutes so that we have time for a discussion. And I will also make a last plea to them to when they use complex terms that not everyone in the audience can understand, to try and make them clear. But we'll start with Alexei.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for coming and to listen our some presentations. Indeed, I'll start with Islam in the North Caucasus. Why we speak so much about this problem, and not only in Moscow and Caucasus itself, but also here in Washington, in Europe, by the way, because it's not a problem of religion, it's a problem of political life, it's a problem of society, it's a problem of ideology. Otherwise, we'll never pay so much attention to Caucasian Islamic situation and problems. Before, well, last 10 years, when we spoke about Islam on Caucasus, as usual, we mentioned the eastern part of the region, the biggest republic of Caucasus, of Russian Caucasus, emphasize, Dagestan, republics of Chechnya, Ingushetia, and so on. So from that point of view, from the point of Islamic view, Caucasus could be divided in two big parts, the eastern and western. What we have now? Now we have You know, we have moving of Islam, mostly radical Islam, to the East. Islamic activity, radical Islamic activity, the problem of how to establish Sharia law, Islamic law, it embraces not only Chechnya and so on, but as well, well, the republics of the western part of Caucasus, like Karachaeva-Cherkessia, Kabardino-Balkaria, and so on. So, last 10 years, we have to understand finally that Islam is a general a problem for all this region, and not only for some territories. Just I don't want to scrutinize some theological nuances, because as usual, not as usual, but sometimes when in Moscow, for instance, on in other some Russian centers, people discuss some Islam, they used to say about the distinctions between Wahhabism, fundamentalism, Islamism, jihadism, Salafism, and what else? Just, of course, everybody understands that such differences exist. But if you ask in Caucasus, for instance, in Dagestan or in Ingushetia, if you put them the same question, what do you want? And if you put it, would it be to Wahhabi, to Salafi, or to Islamist, and so on? The answer will be very simple, even two answers. We want society Islamized, or we want Islamic State, or Islamic State, or a caliphate, and so on, despite all kind of distinctions between so-called a traditional Islam, non-traditional Islam, new Islam, which is coming from abroad, and so on. Those who share the idea of Islamic a perspective, as usual, they say they attempt to explain their position in these frames. If we compare the situation connected to Islam of today and the situation that we had immediately after the collapse of the Soviet Union, I think it is a big difference, which consists in that 10 first years after the collapse of the Soviet Union, that was an Islamic rebirth. That was a totally normal process. That was a reaction against communism, Sovietism, atheism, and so on. It consisted, I mean, this Renaissance in increasing of a number of mosques, a creation of educational system, I mean Islamic educational system, and mostly it consists in some a changes in mentality. Indeed, the Islamization of that time meant that Muslims, practically all Muslims, they felt that they are not only Caucasians or post-Soviets, and their mentality, their identity, doesn't belong only to Russian Federation or to ancient time. But they are Muslims, and they belong to the great Islamic Ummah. And that was very important and very seriously, because it helped them to get rid of the inferiority complex. Of course, in Russia, in Russian Federation, they are in minority, but in general, they are in majority because they are Muslims. That was just, I attempted to depict, to describe 10 first years. What we have at the moment and why we talk so much about Islam. If in 90s there was the main trend was, I would say, indeed a renaissance. Or sometimes it is called legalization of Islam. I disagree with this notion, but it is used in books and in particular by Muslim clergymen. At the moment, we have, or just it depends, or we can call that this situation as a next wave of Islamization, or re-Islamization, or Shariatization. It's up to you. What I mean? I mean, before they thought more about Reconstruction, of course it was some Islamic Reconstruction, yeah? Of course, Islamic activity was multiplied by Chechen separatism, but some revolts in Dagestan, and so on. But in general, they more thought about how to save Islam. At the moment, the problem is how made lands, a territory of the North Caucasus, Islamic or Islamized. And if you go to two republics, to Kabardino-Balkaria, well, to Dagestan, to everywhere, you will see the increasing of their Islamic identity, this a growing. They don't talk about the secular state practically, but they speak about necessity to Islamize, to Shariatize, Caucasian territories. And they did it, and they do it, and they do it because if you cross the frontier between some Russia itself, some Russian oblast, of some Russian federation in the south, and you enter republics like Dagestan or Kabardino-Balkaria or Ingushetia, just I don't want to mention Chechnya, you will see that you are at the moment in Muslim state or something like Muslim state or also or even deeply Islamized. I have nothing against Islam. Okay, that's wonderful. But it creates a certain gap between Muslim North Caucasus and the rest of the Russia. Well, I mentioned before about some changes, about rebirth, some renaissance, Islamic activity, and so on. So that's normal. But at the same time, we have to understand and to recognize that the deepest factor of Islamic activity, is Islamic political and ideological activity in the region is a certain protest, is a reaction against what Moscow did in this some region. What I mean? I mean that when they speak about Sharia law, it means, first of all, that Russian federal law doesn't work and will never work. It means their total disappointment with Russian official policy. It means they don't understand how they could live in the country, I mean Russian Federation, where laws don't work, in the country totally corrupted, and how they can survive, how can they exist, how can they live in the state of civil war? Of course, there is a lot of question about terrorism, about Islamic radicalism, and so on. Some it's normal. But the most important thing, in my opinion, is that this piece of Russia is under rule, well, some lives in the state of civil war. Every day, somebody is killed. Every week, we have explosions. It could be considered some like terrorism. Okay, I agree. But about what kind of terrorism, even Islamic terrorism, we can say if we recognize that it is a civil war. It's abnormal. But Russia, I mean Russian political elite, Moscow, they got a habit of such situation. And in 2000, some this year, some last year, well, And Putin and his team, practically they don't pay big attention to the situation there. They don't pay attention to the problem of Islamic radicalism, terrorism there, civil war, and so on. The abnormal situation, which very deeply linked to Islamic radicalization, is considered on the top in Moscow as a normal. By the way, So this problem of Sharia, problem of Islamization, civil war, the lack of understanding of what we have in Northern Caucasus, in Moscow, it leads to a drift, some North Caucasus are from Russia. It doesn't mean separatist movement, no. But more and more, from the point of view of civil society, well, some culture, religion, values, the North Caucasus is becoming far and far from Moscow. So we receive inside Russian Federation so-called inner abroad. It's abnormal, but it exists. Well, because I have no time, as I understood, just what I can say about the future, about the perspectives. I think the perspectives for the North Caucasus are poor. I'm a pessimist, yes, because practically they have no final solution. I mean, and in Caucasus and in Moscow. It's an issue which will never be closed. And besides, I believe, I can admit the radicalization of Islam, the Islamic and extremist activity across all areas, and two points to as a conclusion, maybe this is a problem of impact of Middle East, of a raising of Islamic activity in Egypt, in Tunisia, and so on Islamic movements, Islamic activities in Russian region, I mean in Caucasus. Just till now, the reaction is rather weak. We don't observe it in the streets. But if you talk to Muslims, If you speak with Muslim clergymen, if you speak even to some politicians, you will see that such reaction will come. So maybe some this year, I think it's a practically inevitable. Let's be ready for Islam as an eternal, as a constant political factor in the North Caucasus. And I'll continue to believe that in Russia, in Moscow, would it be Putin, Medvedev, or somebody else, they are unable to find a normal solution for the relations between this region and Federal Central.
Thank you. Now we're going to hear from Bayram Balci, who's going to show us some pictures as well. So he's going to be for me.
So you know the map. Okay. Thank you very much for your presence here during this conference. Is very important for me because I'm new in this foundation. Sorry?
I'm going to show you the slideshow, sorry. Oh, you can continue.
Okay, so. Thank you very much. So, since 1991, there has been a real Islamic revival in the former Soviet Union, in all the former Soviet Union, not only in Caucasus and Caucasian countries. But in the case of Caucasus regions, this revival is encouraged by three main external influences. The first one is Sunni revival coming from Turkey. The second is Shia revival coming from Iran. And the third important influence is Salafi influences, different Salafi influences coming from the Arab countries. But in today's presentation, I will limit my presentation to analyze only the influences coming from Turkey and from Iran. And for the next paper, next conference, we'll present something about the different and very complicated Salafi influences in Caucasus. The first point is the Turkish Islamic influences in all the Caucasian regions. I think we can say that there are two main actors in the diffusion, in the spreading of Turkish Islamic influences from Turkey to Caucasus and Central Asia. The first one is the Turkish government, the Turkish state. In spite of, there is a sort of paradox, in spite of this, the very secular characteristics, identity of the Turkish state, Turkey has contributed to the diffusion of Islam in the former Soviet Union. In fact, Turkey developed a special policy in order to control the evolution of Islam and Islamism in the Turkic republics of the former Soviet Union and in Azerbaijan and in Caucasus. For this reason, the Turkish government has a very special instrument, a special organization. This is the Diyanet. Diyanet is very famous in Turkey. This is a sort of minister of religious affairs. And in Turkey, this organization is responsible for the management of Islam. And in 1991, this administration was completely renewed, was completely restructured, and was implemented in the Turkish policy for this region. Concretely, this Diyanet contributed to the diffusion, to the construction or the reconstruction of mosques in Azerbaijan and in other countries, and in the diffusion of Islamic literature in Turkish and in local languages, in Azeri and even in Georgian and in Russian. But I think the most important Turkish contribution to the Islamic revival in the former Soviet Union and in Caucasus is not the Turkish contribution, the Turkish official contribution, but the Turkish non-governmental movements' participation. For example, in Turkey, there are a lot of movements. For example, the movement of Said Nursi is very famous in Turkey. The movement of Fethullah Gulen movement, it comes from Said Nursi, but there are big differences between these two movements. And other movements, for example, Naqshbandi or Süleymancı, they are, after the independence of the Soviet, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, they developed their activities in Azerbaijan, even in Georgia, and everywhere. So these Turkish influences are mainly implemented in Azerbaijan, because Azerbaijan, 50 or 60% of the population is Sunni. I don't know, maybe Hikmet.
35.
Yeah. 35. So these Turkish influences are mainly implemented in the Sunni region in Azerbaijan. But these Turkish movements are also present in Georgia, because in Georgia, for example, in Ajaria, the population is mainly Muslim. And for historical reasons, because Islam was introduced in Ajaria by and during the Ottoman Empire. So thanks to this reality, it is easy for Turks to implement their activities in Batumi and around Batumi. But even in Russia and Russian Federation, the Turkish Islamic presence is present, is real. For example, in North Caucasus, different non-official movements were present in North Caucasus, and even in the Russian Federation in Tatarstan and Bashkortostan. So now, the Iranian activities in the Caucasus. The second important contribution to the revival of Islam in this region comes from Iran. Iranian official Islamic activities is very important because, for historical reasons, Iranian Shia is very close to the Islam, to the Azerbaijani Shia. And during the first years of independence in Azerbaijan, it was very easy for Iranian government, but also for Iranian non-governmental organizations to come in Azerbaijan, mainly in Azerbaijan, and to spread a sort of different tendencies of Shia. For example, during the first year of independence, because of the Karabakh War, because of the problem of refugees, it was very easy for different humanitarian organizations coming from Iran to develop the humanitarian activities, but also, in the same time, the religious activities. And, of course, the Iranian embassy and the Iranian cultural center have an important contribution to the Islamic activities in Azerbaijan, but not only in Azerbaijan. But I think, even as it's in the Turkish case, the most important contribution to the revival of Shia in Azerbaijan and in other parts of Caucasus, it comes from the non-governmental organizations coming from Iran. For example, the notion of Hosei. Hosei is very important in the Shia literature, it's very central. Hosein means a sort of Islamic campus, Islamic establishments. And in Iran, for example, in Mashhad, in Qom, and there are huge, very important establishments. And in this campus, in this Hosei, different Islamic endowments, they give the possibility to students from Azerbaijan, from Georgia, even from Russia, to come here and to study Islamic issues. And the notion of marja'i taqlid, the notion of marja'i taqlid is very central to the Shia. During the Soviet period, it was not very known. It was not really known in Azerbaijan, but since the collapse of the Soviet Union, this notion is a little bit known and spread in Azerbaijan. For example, in the Shia ideology, they think that every Muslim, if he wants to be a good Muslim, he must choose a sort of leader, sort of Islamic leader, a guide, and he has to respect, to follow his ideas, his philosophy, in order to be considered good Muslims. In the case of Shia and the Shia cooperation between Iran and Caucasus, after the independence of these republics, for example, different leaders became very popular. For example, Fazıl-ı Kerani and Javad Taprizi, they were very popular in Azerbaijan because they have Azeri origins. They are from Iran, but as you know, in Iran, there is a very important Azerbaijani community. And because of, thanks to the Azeri origin, they are very popular in Azerbaijan. But other leaders are very famous. For example, Khamenei or Sistani. Sistani is popular not only in Azerbaijan, but everywhere in the Shia world because he has good followers in order to spread his ideas. So the geographical distribution of the Shia influences in Caucasus. So mainly the Shia influences from Iran is implemented in Azerbaijan because of historical reasons, mainly in south part of Azerbaijan, but also in Georgia, because in Georgia, in the region of Tbilisi and Marneuli, the population is mainly Azeri, and it's easy for them to control, to develop the activities. But even in Russia, because there is a big Russian Azerbaijani diaspora in Moscow and in different big cities of Russia, and among this, in this community, the influence of Shia leaders is important. Now, I would like to analyze the consequences of this Turkish and Iranian competition in Caucasus and the attitude of the governments towards this competition. In Azerbaijan, Turks from Turkey, all the Turkish movements and the Turkish government, they spread, they encourage the Sunni Islam. They spread a very Turkish Islam and very Sunni Islam. And Iranian, they encourage Shia Islam. It's natural because each country defends, spread this vision of Islam. And in the case of Azerbaijan, this very important point, in the case of Azerbaijan, historically, because of or thanks to the Soviet domination, the boundary, the frontier, the limit between Shia and Sunni was not very evident, was not very visible. And I think since the independence and because of this competition, now there is a sort of a risk of a split between Shia and Sunni philosophies. And I think this situation put the government in a very bad, in difficult position because they wanted to create a sort of national Islam, a sort of Islam in peace with the authorities, with the government. And they would like to create an Islam completely not very dependent from Turkish influences or from Iranian influences, but it's not so easy for them. And sometimes when they want to create this Islam, they forget to respect the religious liberty in the country. In Georgia, so the consequences in Algeria, for example, the population is mainly Sunni, and I think Tbilisi tolerates, accepts the Turkish influence in Algeria because a sort of moderate Islam, and because the relations, the political relations between Georgia and Turkey are excellent, no problem with relations between the two countries. In Russia, at the beginning of the 90s, Turkish movements were really present, and they were also, for example, very important Turkish high schools of Fethullah Gulen in North Caucasus and in Tatarstan and in Bashkortostan. But in 2001 or 2002, all these schools' establishments were completely closed. In conclusion, so I think Caucasian Islam enters in a process of differentiation since 1991. This is very important. The point of differentiation is very important. And sometimes the local governments, they have difficulties in accepting this diversification because they would like to impose their vision of Islam. And they seek in Azerbaijan to create a national Islam, but sometimes it's difficult for them because they don't really, because they, I think they must accept the plurality of Islams and organizations in this country. And I would like to conclude with this point that I presented a paper, and my colleagues will present and will present different papers about the Islamic revival in Caucasus. But I think there is a real revival in Caucasus in all the region, but in spite of this revival, societies remain very secular. This is a very important point. Can I have 2 more minutes?
For the pictures,
yeah. So this is Ashura ceremony in Nardara near Baku. I think this picture, I have maybe 200 pictures, but I decided to, it was taken in Nardara near Baku. This is a good example of development of Shia Shiism between Iran and Azerbaijan. Ashura was present even during the Soviet period, but I think since the independence of Azerbaijan, and with the influences from Iran, Ashura became more important in Baku and around Baku and all the Azerbaijan. This is another example of Islamic revival. This picture was taken in Masallı near Iran, South Azerbaijan. And I don't know how to explain you this picture because it's very difficult to explain. Here, the photo on the tombs, the woman, and the woman was not, she didn't wear the veil, but since of the Islamization, I think, the family of this woman decided to veil, to put a scarf on the tomb. This is, you know, if you visited Baku, you know, this is Bibi Haybet Mosque. This is a good example of the contribution to the state because it was supported, reconstructed with the support of President.
Yes.
I think. This picture was taken in Batumi, the central mosque of Batumi. And here we can see the influence of Turkish Islam. The minaret is completely Turkish and Ottoman style. This is the central mosque of Tbilisi. The style is completely Azeri because this mosque is controlled by Azeri community, and historically there is an important Azerbaijani community in Tbilisi. This is in North Caucasus, in Nazran and Maykop. The first one, this was taken in a weekly Friday prayer. And this is the second. This is this one. This one is a small madrasa in Nazran. And you can find a lot of small madrasas in not only in the street, but from Maykop to Ingushetia, even in Vladikavkaz. It's easy to find this sort of madrasa. And these men are really three famous Iranian Shia leaders. The first one is here. This is Fazlullah Kerani. He was very famous and very popular in Azerbaijan. This is Javad Tabrizi. I had an interview with them, but unfortunately with them, 2 weeks later they died, but it was not. But now this is very popular. He's very popular in Iran and in all Shia world. He's Ali Sistani. And this is the last picture. It was taken in Qom, And in this picture, you have students from Azerbaijan and Georgia who are students with the support of private organizations in the city of Qom. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bayram. And last but not least, Hikmet.
Dear friends and colleagues, thank you for coming. I had long presentation, but for these 50 minutes, I'm forced to cut them all. So if I have some 30 minutes, I believe we divide this problem. In my presentation, I would like to speak about religious freedom and religious extremism in Azerbaijan, traditional Muslims and new Muslims, believers and deep believers, political Islam, radical Islam, and anti-clerical movement in Azerbaijan. I want to say that our conference is conducting in the time of new wave of tension between our secular state and religious activists. Now we have huge wave of arrests in Azerbaijan. Some 30 or more religious activists were arrested. And because of lack of transparency, we really do not know who of them are guilty and who not, unfortunately. But experts and observers say that this new wave started just after the terrorist attempt to blast Israeli embassy in Baku. Explanation is like that. Islam came to Azerbaijan in 17th century. I forced it to be very brief, I'm sorry. Then in 16th century, Shia version of Islam started to spread in the country. Now we have 65% of population in Shia branch of Islam and 35% is Sunni. But who is this 35% and 65% of Muslims? In fact, they are not good Muslims, let's say. They are cultural Muslims, and because of 70 years of Soviet forced atheism, let's say Azerbaijani population mostly became godless. If you ask them, they say, yes, I'm Muslim. But when you go deeper, ask, are you pray each day or are you fasting and so on, so on. Do you know the pillars of Islam? No one say. Few of them say yes. So according to our opinion poll, now 96% of respondents, especially youth among whom we conduct our opinion poll, say yes, we're Muslims, but only 13 or 15% of them are deep believers. That means they make namaz, they know everything about Quran, they interesting, they acting, and so on. Only 15. In some opinion polls, national opinion polls for all ages, there is some figures like 20% of population are deep believers. And these deep believers are the really subject of, let's say, our conference or research like presented here. This godless Muslim, Stalin created Muslim, live in peace, but then borders were open, Soviet Union collapsed, and many missionaries from all religion in the world came to Azerbaijan. Shia activists from Iran, Nursists from Turkey and Wahhabists from Saudi Arabia. Also, together with them, even Jehovah's Witnesses come to Azerbaijan, and they create some groups. For the first, let's say, 5 years, nobody cares about that. Because in general, I can say Azerbaijani society is very tolerant. But after 5 or 6 years, there, let's say, secularists in society see some negative effects of these missionaries. And they start to be suppressed, repressed. Many of them was withdrawn from country. Religious literature from abroad was now forbidden and undergone very strong censorship. The last law of our parliament, again, this missionaries and new religion, which come from abroad, is that those who educate Islam abroad couldn't be mullahs in Azerbaijan. So that was shows a level of concern. And unfortunately, I can say, the situation is like that. Democrats in the country do not openly protest against this repression. And it was kind of results of Islamophobia, which we see in the world. Also, we see it in Azerbaijan. Now I want to draw your attention to, I can say it's new subject for research, anti-clerical movement, which exists in Azerbaijan. When Russian Empire occupied Azerbaijan, it was a north pass of Iran then, together with imperialism and colonialism, enlightenment came. We have to accept that. European ideas of liberalism, enlightenment, science, rationalism, also start to penetrate to Azerbaijan and was accepted very gladly. And even in 19th century, in the middle of 19th century, we have huge, very powerful social group of intelligentsia, and some of them are intellectuals, we can call them, which is start to speak totally against obscurantism, for open society, for women rights, and so on, so on. And in the middle, this movement started in the middle of 19th century and continues till today. In the beginning of the 20th century, there was, there was helped by Bolsheviks. I mean, because Bolsheviks was against religion, so this anti-clerical movement, liberal anti-clerical movement, come together with communist anti-clerical movement and became very strong. And they, I can say, the achievement was huge. Azerbaijani women were liberated, I can say. And it was not mechanically. It was deep in psychology. And let's say, I want to say that in the 1930s, famous Azerbaijani screenwriter Jafar Jabbarli wrote very interesting drama, Seville. Seville, it is a name of woman. So Seville rebel against this obscurantism, divorce from her husband and go to the society, became person, and so on, so on. And this personage was very popular. In after Second World War, there was some very strong and huge monument on Seville. Seville doesn't exist, but there is in the very center. And the monument like exposed like woman get out of veil. like that. Unfortunately, I don't have picture, but in internet you can find monument of two women. 2 days after that, 2 years after that, there was written some opera against Seville, very popular. And Haydar Aliyev, former president of Azerbaijan Republic, also called her his daughter Seville. And that is not accidentally. It means that everybody knows what Seville means. Father Haydar Aliyev, under skin, let's say, was for one of the representatives of this anti-clerical movement. They are everywhere, in democratic camp, in KGB, in authoritarian government, everywhere. Tension between the clerical movement and anti-clerical movement happened last year. Maybe you heard about that, but one of our famous journalists and publicists, Rafik Tagi, was murdered by religious activists for, let's say, insulting Islam or Prophet Muhammad. He was murdered by the fatwa from Ayatollah Lankerani that Bayram Bey showed his picture. So can you imagine this Ayatollah from Iran, from different country, ordered to Muslim kill this publicist. So the story is exactly like with Salman Rushdie, but murder was successful, let's say, for them. This murder, of course, make everybody very angry in society. Government also sent some messages that we will do something very bad with these guys. And intelligentsia, they came to come together, some 50, 60, and write very strange manifesto to the world community, to United Nations, and so on, so on. Guys, help us with Iran, help us with Islam. We, representatives of old civilization, live free and easy in our country. Then Arabs came and bring this face. We don't know what to do. Stalin some kind of help us temporary, and now it's come back. This letter create again new wave of discussions, tensions, and so on, so on. I just want to show you that there is strong anti-clerical movement and in Azerbaijan, like a social group, and researchers should take give attention to them. That is their last manifesto against growing. Not just figures.
Five minutes.
Oh, 5 minutes. I have. Thank you. By the way, I send this. I will send this manifesto to Tom. I don't know how to. If somebody want to share it, to read it. Through sociology and psychology, I can say it is important document. Then some figures from our opinion polls on Islam. About Islamic political activists. Is political Islam exists in Azerbaijan in what level? Yes, we have Islamic party in Azerbaijan Islamic party, but they are not that popular. They started with a all-national movement for independence in the 19s, and they were together with Democrats, just say we want religious freedom, but very soon they split. I know them personally because they are leaders, were the members of the board of Popular Front. They was respectful persons, honest one. But in 3-4 years, they totally became pro-Iranian something. I don't want to say agents. they start to speak slogans exactly what Khomeini speak then. Death to Zionism, I don't know, United States, big devil, Great Britain, small devil, and Russia is devil at all. They speak like that. I don't know. I don't have exact evidence that they are financed by Iran. Don't have. But it can be. Because even they, you know, they repeat even the events there. If in Iran there are some huge demonstration against Israel and for Palestine, the same day they create some demonstration in Baku and so on, like that. Democratic government of Abul Fazl el-Chibei registered this party, but last 1 year this government, and next president Haider Aliyev was not that kind with them. So after 3 or 4 years, he canceled their registration and arrested some 5 leaders of them for prison for 7 or 8 years, like that. Arrests continue till this day. We don't know when arrests started and why this guy arrested, but each, let's say, 3 or 4 months, we see that some guys from Azerbaijani Islamic Party arrested. But they don't stop, because they are deep believers. They believe that Allah is on their side. In the end, they will win. So as I told, deep believers is 20% of Azerbaijani believers. Then, last. Azerbaijani Islamic Party, not popular at all. In public opinion polls, they couldn't get, let's say, even 1% of voters. Even then, there is not any Muslim leader which is popular. The leader of official mother church, let's say, Allah Shukur Pashazadeh, Sheikhul Islam, just got 4% of respect among believers. Ayatollah Khomeini, 1%. Wahhabi leader, 1%. Bin Laden, 0.2%. Then other question was, should radical Islamists be allowed to participate in election? Yes, just 35%. No, 33%. Do not know, 32%. So situation is like that. Azerbaijan do not have strong political Islamic party. But unfortunately, we have extremist groups. They are not, this is not a movement, but they don't need to be movement. They never go public. They work underground. And it needs just 5 or 6, 7 person to come together, declare themselves saviors, and blast something. That is what's going on. We have very the bad tendency of growing of radical and extremist movement. Some of them are going to fight to Chechnya. Some of them going to fight to Afghanistan. One of them was even in Guantanamo, liberated last year. So another part of my presentation is what's to be done, but I don't have time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have plenty of time, about 40, 45 minutes for a discussion. So please raise your hands and introduce yourself. Wait for the microphone. Wendy, in the middle. Let's start with you.
Thanks. Wendy Silverman from the Department of State's Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor. And the question, what is to be done, I think, is one that we would all like to hear more about. So could you each speak to what you think should be done, and both how the international community can help, and more broadly speaking, what is to be done? And thanks for the excellent presentations.
Good. Well, that's a pretty big question, so I'm not going to take any more. And let's... for a while, maybe. But by the way, Alexei obviously did speak about Russia and the North Caucasus, so let's we will speak about the North Caucasus, but let's not try to get into too many details about it, because we do have a whole panel. But let's... Hikmet.
Start with me.
You now have the chance to read your conclusion.
Conclusions, yes. So for that, I can say that to each this government in Azerbaijan, authoritarian one, and they want to put their control on everything. They don't tolerate any uncontrolled activity. And their response to activity and to extremism is just arrest, arrest, arrest. Censorship, arrest, ban, forbidden. Of course, this doesn't help. As we see, arrest started from 95. Now, 20 years or something after, we see no results of this repression. So it should be some democratic government. It should be dialogue. It should be open a space for discussion, which is not now. We don't see have them. Then among these religious activists, among this 20% which I told, there is some moderate guys, Muslim Democrats, I can say. They should be endorsed. They should be bring in democratic camp. Through them, maybe we can speak with other radical Muslims. And even this... Democrat Muslims are afraid. They're scared of all these obscurant guys who can kill even those who are, let's say, not proper Muslim, because they hate each other more than secularists. For that, they should be helped through them. We can speak with radical Islamists, and it should be written some open concordat, I can say, in which there should be explained. Because when you speak with a religious person about, like our friends say now, what do you want? They say Islamic State, but it should be written for them to explain what is Islamic State, to cut hands, to stone women. Women rights are less than man's. Believers got more rights than non-believers. It should be openly written and everybody will see. Then maybe they will wake up. Because, yes, I'm secularist, but I believe that they are dreaming. This 20% of believers, they got some kind of zombieing, maybe. They should wake up. So it's psychologists also have to work with us on this. In brief, it's like that. Dialogue, honesty, moderate Muslims, like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Hikmet. Now, does either of you want to rise to the challenge of what to be done?
I have nothing to add because I have no solution. I'm very sorry for this, but I have no solution. Maybe, but I think the dialogue is possible between governments and even with the radicals, this is my personal opinion, and maybe we could help them to organize a session of dialogue, etc.
Secularist left in Turkey, yes.
Bayram, I join some your answer because I don't know what to do, in particular in the North Caucasus, because in 90s, well, even then somebody attempted to do something, but without any issue, and I don't know to whom it's possible to help. In my opinion, it's a first of all, and secondly, it's a big problem of relations between federal center and Caucasus. How to work? When it was a case of Chechnya, that was understandable, but at the moment, I raise my hand.
Okay, maybe I could just ask each of you to name. We've got the map in front of us. What one geographical spot, maybe, that you're more concerned about than any other spot is You know, we're using the word mosaic earlier, changing mosaic of the Caucasus, and so I'd be interested if there was. Should we be particularly interested, for example, in, I don't know, the Lenkeran region of Azerbaijan or Dagestan? Is there any particular geographical spot that you...
Yes, I can say you are completely right. South of Azerbaijan, which is in border with Iran, and some villages across Baku, like Nardaran, Mashtaga, and like that.
Do you have an answer to that question? Keep going.
No question.
Any geographical spots that we should be particularly paying attention to as sources of worry?
Maybe I think North Caucasus. North Caucasus in the region of Dagestan, Chechnya, and Ingushetia, the west?
Yeah.
The west and not the east part of North Caucasus.
Alexei?
Well, once again, I can repeat that I don't know. But if, for instance, in Dagestan and Chechnya, even in Ingushetia, the situation is known and depicted, I think it will be more interesting to pay attention to other republics like Kabardino-Balkaria. Of course, it's not a big deal. It's not the Middle East, but still.
Okay. Later, of course, we will be hearing from Sufyan Zhimogov, who comes from Kabardino-Balkaria. Let me take two or three questions. Rich Kozlerich, right at the back.
Rich Kozlerich, George Mason University, and former U.S. ambassador to Azerbaijan. I wonder if Bayram and Hekmet might comment in a little more detail about the role of the Gulenists as a factor, because, you know, from this part of the world, they have a kind of a mixed image, and I just wondered how they were perceived. And then for Bayram, maybe you could take this religious competition between Iran and Turkey and ask yourself, looking ahead, whether that might translate into renewed political competition between Iran and Turkey for influence in this region.
Thank you. Does anyone with their hand up have a kind of related question about Azerbaijan? Or, okay, in that case, Wayne.
Wayne Mary, the American Foreign Policy Council. Azerbaijan, of course, has a very substantial internal population of people displaced 2 decades ago by the Karabakh conflict, a conflict with an overtly Christian society. I'm wondering if your studies have indicated any significant difference in Islamic self-perception, particularly among younger people, of this part of the Azerbaijani population and of the population as a whole. Are younger males, for example, more radicalized? Do they see this conflict over their former homes as a secular conflict or also as a religious conflict? Is this a subject in which Azerbaijani population as a whole has a view, or is there a significantly different view among those people who were actually displaced by the conflict?
Thank you. Bayram.
The Fethullah Gulen movement is very present, was and still today present in Azerbaijan, but not only in Azerbaijan, even in Georgia. In Georgia, they have a very big university, the University of Black Sea in Tbilisi, and they have high schools in Batumi, in 4 or 5 high schools in Georgia and in Azerbaijan. The movement is very present. But I think the contribution of this movement is active not only in Caucasus, but in the all former Soviet Union. And when I started my researches on this movement, it was present only in the former Soviet Union, but now it's very universal, it's present everywhere. I think at the beginning, the aim of this movement was to diffuse Islam. And they did this during the first year of independence, and then they changed their attitude. Now, in the high schools, they diffuse not... In fact, the schools are very completely secular education. They diffuse secular education in the high schools. And then I think they played an important role in the development of relations between Turkey and Azerbaijan, because
the movement's activity is not limited to the education. It's even in economic, in business, in different fields. So, and the nature of the Islam diffused by this movement is a sort of Turkish Islam, the Islam that you see now in Turkey. And now this Islam is controlled with Turkey because the relation between this movement and the AKP in Turkey are excellent. So I think this is a very Turkish, a sort of thesis between Turkish and Islam they diffused in Azerbaijan and in all Central Asia. The second question is the political competition between Turkey and Iran and the religious competition. In fact, this religious competition is one part of this political competition. And I remember I had a very interesting discussion with Rafiq Ali Abdiou.
Yeah,
yeah. Yes, I think it was during the first year of independence, Azerbaijani authorities, they hesitated between what sort of Islam they should develop. And I think for political reasons, because they had excellent relations with Turkey, they prefer the Turkish influence. And this religious competition was one dimension of the political competition with the two countries. But since probably, France, I think since the 2025, for example, to 2005, they, even the Azerbaijani government, they hesitate between Turkish and Azerbaijan because they prefer really create a sort of national Islam and not completely link it, because for them, even for them, it's not very interesting to have all Turkish or Iranian influence on Azerbaijani Islam. And I think it was third, yeah.
Do you want to?
Thank you.
Yes. First, I want to answer about the replace it people.
Displaced people.
Displaced, I'm so very sorry. Displaced people, they are 700,000 of Azerbaijan after this bloody conflict and occupation of Azerbaijani territories. But in fact, our opinion polls do not show any significant difference. And when speak about Muslim and Muslim sentiments, everybody have to understand that these Muslims are cultural Muslims, Stalin's Muslims, godless Muslims. And only 15 or 20% of those who call them Muslims can be called Muslims in Azerbaijan. Deep believers, I can say. So we don't have any significant difference.
But I suppose the question is there a demographic group where these 15% is stronger?
We cannot find this. So don't have evidence. Maybe, I don't know. Then about this Fatullah Gulen and Nursi's, I speak about them in different presentation, everybody interested, and maybe some of you know my answer. Again, for Mr. Kazlerich, I want to say that my idea, I communicate with them, that they are most progressive Muslim sect in the world, most progressive. The only one who have the answer to the question, should we start to fight now, to blast Washington now? If other Muslim sects say, yes, we should, they say no. After 10 years, give us time. Give us time, we will educate people.
We should have invited them.
Yeah, invite them, educate. Maybe then you don't need to blast Washington or, I don't know, Baku. So we are going through education. We have to create new educated Muslims. We will build universities, and they doing like that. So that is their progressive, let's say, character of them. And sometimes they are very successful. Because, you know, as Bayram Bey mentioned here, one of the leaders of government's religious committee, Mr. Rafiq Aliyev, now he's not in position. Once, in answer to the questions of journalists, why you bring Fatullah Gulen guys to Azerbaijan, explain it like that. People need religion. That is in their psychology. That is his explanation. And we don't have our own religious agents. Among all other missionaries in the world, Nurchular was the most educated. For that, we prefer them. That was his explanation. In fact, I agree. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a question here at the front. Just wait for the microphone and introduce yourself.
Thanks very much. I'm Alexei Pimenov. I'm working for the Voice of America, the Russian service. And my question is this. I'm recalling one of the recent conversations with the Moscow-based specialist in the Caucasus, Sergei Arutyunov, a very prominent figure, who told me in particular that, according to him, the main conflict in the Caucasus in terms of religion, in terms of political Islam, has been between the newly created or newly widespreading integralist Islam, like the Salafi Islam and all this, on the one hand, and the traditional, mostly Sufi-oriented trends represented not only among the, simply among the believers in the religious circles, but also represented by quite established political elites in the Caucasus, specifically in Chechnya, in other places. So according to him, it has been not the struggle between Islamist and non-Islamist tendencies, but rather that between two kinds of Islam. So I would like to know the opinions of the speakers with regard to this. Thank you.
In brief, I don't agree. That's
okay.
It.
Well, tell us why you don't.
Yeah. Well, there is no this traditional Islamists, Stalin's Muslims. They are not acting. They are not in this drama. That's it.
Well, just I didn't understand your question because well the problem, to my opinion, is much more complicated because there is of course a religious diversification, there is a religious ideological and political competitions, but if you want me to paint the situation and in a black and white, it's impossible. So it's impossible. Of course, there is a competition for mosques and so on, for education. Of course, there is a competition to be close to administration. So by the way, even Salafi, sometimes they cooperate with administration. Of course, in a clandestinity. So it's not a normal, a clear Islamic picture. And it differs from what we had in 90s, and even more. Just now, the majority of scholars, they want to present the situation in the frames of a traditional and non-traditional Islam. But there is a cooperation between Salafi and Muslim brotherhoods. I mean, Naqshbandiya, Qadiriyya, and Salafiyya, and more. We have an exceptional case in Chechnya, when Islamization, a traditional Islamization, is coming from the top, from Ramzan Kadyrov, the secular president appointed by Putin. He says that he's a very traditional, but his ideology, his tools, are look like similar to Salafi. So what can we do?
Byron, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think it could be compared to a sort of competition between local Islam and the imported Islam, because this is very natural, because after the independence of these republics, I think it was natural, normal to receive foreign influences from Turkey, from Iran. I think this is natural, and sometimes the local authorities and the traditional Muslim in Caucasus and Central Asia, sometimes they are not really ready for the competition, I think. And sometimes they, for example, traditional leaders, they have a problem with knowledge, for example, in terms of Islam, because the young generation after the independence, they had the possibility to go to Cairo, Al-Azhar, or to different countries and to receive Islamic education. And this is the main problem, because there is a problem of organization of education in all the countries. But now, I think the authorities try to organize, to create new elites, new religious elites, in the country, and I think they will probably resolve this, find a solution in the future.
Thank you. Okay, we have quite a few hands. Kenan has been waiting patiently.
Yeah. Kenan Aliyev from Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Azerbaijani service. Just a brief comment, then a question. A few years ago, we launched a project called Islam and Democracy on our website, supported by the State Department. And we were surprised to see the interest in religion issues and discussion about religion on our site, because in the beginning we thought this is going to be a marginal kind of portal which will engage people and let them discuss the issues, especially about Islam. But numbers are growing. I think this is one of the, in my humble opinion, again, in Azerbaijan, one of the biggest challenges for anyone who is dealing with radicalization of Islam or with Islam in any case, it's a lack of education. And I think lack of the government strategy about how to handle the groups which is actually going on out of its control. For example, we have reports of people being forcefully shaved in the northern Azerbaijan, in town of Zagatala. We receive these calls like almost every week. Does it help to keep Islam under control? That's the question. I think it's probably even more radicalizing people in that region. Or in this case, actually, of clamping down on uncontrolled Islam, government is not discriminating. They're closing with mosques, Sunni mosques. You can see also closing of Shia mosques in Baku, in other cities. So in this case, there is no discrimination in terms of we're doing this to promote Shia Islam or we're doing this to promote the Sunni Islam. And this creates tensions. Tensions, and from our observations, what we see in Baku, a lot of people go to mosques because they see this is the last place where they can actually freely assemble. You can't have freedom of assembly and not have freedom of religion. Imagine United States, you know, without freedom of religion, but having, let's say, freedom of press. It's impossible. So I think in from our observations, we see that the lack of political freedoms and lack of any freedoms in the country also galvanizing and helping these groups to get bigger, especially groups which is outside of official Islam, which is not under Sheikh al-Islam, which is officially appointed person who in charge of all the Islamic affairs in Azerbaijan. Same thing applies to the licensing of the Islamic or religious literature, licensing the mullahs. If you want to be mullah, now you have to pass the exam, which is also for many independent groups in Azerbaijan, Islamic groups, it's an absurd kind of situation. So lack of government strategy on how handle these groups, which are growing, you know, no matter what, I would agree with Hikmet Bey, yes, Azerbaijan is secular, but lack of education, influence from outside, lack of government strategy on in terms of addressing these Islamic groups, driving people to religion and to mosques, and lack of freedoms. Lack of freedoms, it's one of the fundamental issues. Disbelief, I mean, disillusionment with the Western or values, with U.S. policy, for example, Western values of freedom and democracy, also pushing a lot of people toward Islam. And to answer to your question, one spot where to watch could be explosive in Azerbaijan in terms of Islamic radicalism, I would look at to the north of Azerbaijan. Region Kusar, Zagatala, very much influenced by the groups from Dagestan, the Salafi groups, very radical, connected, and so that could be another issue. But back to my question, sorry for this long comment. What can you have, can you control the Islam in the country where you don't have freedom of religion? Or you have freedom of religion, but to the extent which you want to control. So that would be a question to the experts. Thank you.
Thank you, Kenan. Do we have any other Azerbaijani questions out there? Okay, there's Corey and behind you as well.
Sorry, Corey Welt, George Washington University. Just a short question. When we talk about unofficial Islam in Central Asia, one of the organizations that comes up time and time again is Hizb ut-Tahrir. We never hear mention of Hizb ut-Tahrir in Azerbaijan, and I wonder why it hasn't.
I don't understand. About
recovering from a cold. Hizb ut-Tahrir, HT.
Hizb ut-Tahrir,
right.
Yes.
We hear about
it
all the time in Central Asia, never in Azerbaijan. Yes. Why has it failed to make any inroads? Mm.
Thank you. And behind you, two questions.
I'm Mike Nelson. I've been a professor of Internet Studies at Georgetown, so my question is about the Internet. Azerbaijan has actually been doing quite a bit in the Internet. They're hosting the Internet Governance Forum this fall, a major UN meeting. I'm curious, I just came from a meeting on the Internet in the Arab Spring, hosted by the Internet Society across town. Have we seen the use of social media by either the extremist Islamic groups, by the moderate Islamic groups, or by expats and people who might want to see a more secular society?
Okay.
Hi, my name is Gadir Shiraliev, Navanti Group, and I have a question for Mr. Hajizadeh. You started your presentation with the recent arrests. So as a close follower, I wanted to know what was the general public opinion on this, on the recent arrests? And my second question is to Mr. Balje, and you told us that you interviewed Ayatollah Lankarani and Tabrizi. I was wondering if you noticed any significant differences in their views towards Azerbaijan or no? Towards Azerbaijan and Islam in Azerbaijan. Any significant differences in their views?
Okay. A bunch of interesting questions. Let's start with Hikmet. Just choose any that you want.
I completely agree with Kanan Aliyev from Radio Liberty, that, and it's well known that crises, economic troubles, and lack of democracy bring to radicalization of the public activity in any sphere, also in religion. So, and there is no way out just only with repression. I mentioned this, I agree. I'm not the director of Azerbaijani Republic. Just agree with you. Then about the social media and religious activity, if I understand you well, yes, they are very active. Each small group have some, at least page in Facebook. Also, they have web pages. And even very radical Muslims have their web pages. Let's say Azerbaijani fighters in Afghanistan. They have their own web pages and they expose their photos there, many times in masks, showing how they fight. There is some videos. Moderate Muslims also and democratic Muslim even have, let's say, some two or three newspapers. They are active, but again, this is within these deep believers, within this 15-20% of population they acting. Then about the question of Gadir Bey, what the public opinion about arrest, as I watch from here, unfortunately, public is silenced. That is because of Islamophobia, which I'm not afraid to say, the result of of these Islamists, mainly. They, by themselves, bring to situations that no one wants to defend them. So in brief is that. Public is silent. Thank you.
And did you have a question to Kuri's question about...
Hizb ut-Tahrir. Unfortunately, I have no much information because they are not in Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
Maybe Bayram Bey will answer.
Yeah. I think Hizb ut-Tahrir is absent in Azerbaijan because there is a little bit religious liberty. It's not the case, for example, in Uzbekistan. Uzbekistan, in absence of religious liberty, is more practical because they have no choice. And maybe because initially it was implemented in Uzbekistan and in Azerbaijan, it's really absent, I think, because in the presence of religious liberty, it's not easy for Hizb ut-Tahrir to develop his activities. This is my supposition.
So your question, Kenan, the control, how to control Islam, I think it's not just to control Islam. This is my personal opinion. If authorities accept to cooperate to deal with Islam, it's not necessarily to control all the Islamic organizations, because it's impossible. I think it's impossible to control Islam. And if when they want to control it, they create a lot of problems. Because the main problem in Azerbaijan, for example, sometimes if they accept to cooperate with the special organizations, special movements, maybe it could be more easy for and practically and convenient for everybody. So I think sometimes the government, they're very, sometimes for security reasons, they imagine that if they control the Muslim organization, they will have peace everywhere. And it's not the case, unfortunately. And it's not necessary for them to control the political, all the Islamic organizations. So the use of media, yes, I think it's not necessary to precise new things. But I think in Azerbaijan, not only in Azerbaijan, but in different republics, they try to imitate a sort of Arab Springs, but it's not easy because the situation and the context is not the same. And I don't think that the Arab Springs could have real success in these countries because they don't have the same history, the same social contexts. So the interview with the difference between your question was. In fact, for them, they don't pay attention to see if the students come from Azerbaijan or from Georgia or from Iran. For them, the most important to have a maximum of followers. So they have the special books, Risala. Risala is very famous, very important. And for them, it's very important to have to spread the Risala and to have Daftar, that's an official office in different countries. And they don't really know what situation in Azerbaijan, and it's not important for them. For them, the most important is to have maximum of followers in different countries.
Alexei, okay. Anything you want to add?
Well, this is connected with some Azerbaijan, of course, but anyway, because I had it several times, the notion Stalin's Muslim or some cultural Muslims. Well, in that case, let's say Putin's Muslim, yeah. I think it's not a problem of
Putin's Russians.
Putin's Russians, Muslims, all these tricks, yes. But anyway, it's a problem not how to call them, but a trend. Because 20 years ago, and I know it very well, in Azerbaijan, by the way, in Uzbekistan, well, everywhere, even in Dagestan, in Caucasus, in Russian Caucasus, they say, well, we aren't like in Middle East. We are post-Soviet. We are Uzbek and not Arabs. But the trend is that the post-Soviet space is evaporating, or it evaporates. And what came instead? Instead came what we can call in Central Asia and Caucasia and Caucasus. It's some Muslim countries and not a post-Soviet. This is a problem. So from that point of view, I think the impact from Middle East will increase. And by the way, about radicalism, about all these tricks, I remember in 2002, I talked to an imam, not in Azerbaijan, but in Central Asia, in Namangan or a city like that. And he suddenly told me, if, I remember, it was 2002, if Bin Laden wants to participate in the presidential election in Uzbekistan, he will be winner. By the way, in the same year, 2002 to 2003, the popularity of Bin Laden in Moscow, not in Chechnya, in Moscow, was very, very high. And about 30% of Muslims in Moscow, they respected him. So it's a trend.
It was because of the support of Putin, maybe now?
Maybe.
Okay, thank you. Let's take three more questions, and I think we'll have to. Oh my goodness, there's so many. This gentleman in the middle, I think, has been waiting for a while.
Thank you very much. Ayub Kajiev from Azerbaijan Embassy. I'd like to ask a question about the pictures, especially a picture, that woman picture on a grave.
Yeah.
Like, I came from Azerbaijan very recently. I have never seen something like that, like woman picture on a grave with a scarf. Another picture, Ashura Day. Like, I think this is, that was in the past, because nowadays people on Ashura Day, I don't know if you know or not, like go donating their bloods, helping to each other. That's what, like, it doesn't come from Iran or Turkey. That's what people do in Azerbaijan. Thank you very much.
Do you want to just quickly respond to that?
Yeah. Yes. If you remember, at the end of my presentation, I told that the Islamic revival, not only in Azerbaijan, all those countries, a minority. Of course, there is a revival of Islam in Azerbaijan, but mainly the population remains is secular. It's very important. And I didn't tell that these pictures are representative of all Azerbaijan, but this is a real reality of Azerbaijan. Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's take this lady at the front. Try and keep your questions brief so that we can get in a few.
Yael Levine, Eurasia Group. You talk a lot about the spread of different kinds of Islam from different regions, from Iran, from Turkey, from Dagestan. Is there any way there could be the reverse and a sort of more moderate Stalin Islam could spread in the other direction through the more radical places, especially as Azerbaijan, you know, stature in the world grows with its economics? And if not, I mean, I understand that that's not the trend you're seeing at all. If not, why do you think that is?
Okay, thank you. Maybe that was the first time moderate and Stalin have been put together in the same sentence. Thank you. Did you have a question? Gentleman in the third row, can you just wait for the microphone?
Mulat Ahmed Karimov, student at Johns Hopkins SAIS. If I may, I would like to push a little bit further our panelists to talk a little bit about the differentiation between good and bad Muslims across the region and in Russia. And I was wondering if they could name some of the objective criteria for the state, how they differentiate between bad and good Muslims, particularly in Russia and in other states across the region. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'm not sure we did hear the phrase good and bad Muslims, but...
I understand the question.
Okay, Okay, let's just try and round up everyone in the room, if they don't mind just being quite brief, starting at the back. Yeah.
John Iskander from the Foreign Service Institute, and... it's a quick challenge on the tone of how we're talking about this. It seems to me that we are equating, not necessarily directly, but I think in tone, we're equating the rise or the revival of Islam with radicalism and extremism. And this seems to me really dangerous because, I mean, there's, you know, religious revival and religious change that happens in various places, including obviously in the United States, that doesn't at all necessarily equate radicalism or extremism or violence. And it seems to me that we need to be very careful about how we talk about that, as well as sort of a teleology that assumes, you know, progress, development, modernity, anti-obscurantism, to use that terminology. Seems to me it's also an ideological position that I think we should be careful of.
Thank you. That's a very good point. Just and two rows in front of you.
Steve Winders, local researcher. There have been a lot of discussion about the fact that Western democracy promotion NGOs in Egypt, for example, were giving training to the Salafist party in Egypt. Some people think that's a good idea, a bad idea. But if you take the case of Azerbaijan, would Western NGOs or similar efforts at training be a good idea, a bad idea, impossibility? Or what's your opinion on that?
Thank you. And just across the aisle, I think that's...
Stanley Kober, is a covert war developing between Iran and Azerbaijan, with Azerbaijan arresting Iranians and the Iranians accusing Azerbaijan of helping Israel with the assassination or murder of the scientists in Tehran?
Wow. Okay, that's some very interesting questions there. I'll take in order, for starting with Alexei. Just choose any questions that you want to answer.
All about Gulen? Yes. So you, some you ask what? Some blood.
I was wondering. That the states, in the name of fighting extremism and terrorism, try to more and more regulate the religion, and the argument that there are good and bad Muslims. So I was wondering what would be actually the objective criteria for deciding between what is good and what is bad, in an attempt to fight that extremism, what actually would be a justification of this increasing regulation of the religion?
Well, I don't understand them. I mean, in Russia, because they blamed some Gulen and extremism. They blamed some Gulen and all those who want to promote it in extremism, and I don't understand why. And there is a dispute even between Russian official Muslim, a clergyman, who well are inclined to promote it, and secular administration. It's a big problem. It's a very big problem, and I hope that it will be regulated in the future. And about revival Islam and its radicalization, well, we talk about Islam as about an ideology and about its presence in the political life. If we begin to talk, if we want to talk and discuss Islamic problems in other frames, in the frames of a theologically, we need something more. We need something else. And maybe the audience in that case will be another.
I think in Azerbaijan, when I was in Azerbaijan, it's not 3 years, even for Azerbaijan authorities, it's not easy, it's not clear to give a definition of what is bad or good for us. Because in Azerbaijan, for example, you have two main organizations for the management of Islam. The Muslim Caucasus Muslim Board, Pashazada, and the State Committee for the Religious Organizations. And I think for them, it's not really easy to give a definition to tell this good, this not good for us. But mainly, for example, I think when there is organization who accept to communicate the official registration in the state community, I think it's enough for them to be accepted and to cooperate with us. So it's not so, it's for them, the most important is to accept the supremacy of state and the importance of the state on the management of Islam. And another point that we should analyze, I think, the Islamic revival is a reality not for this region, but for all the former Soviet Union. And it doesn't mean that all the formal or the external Islamic influence are bad or radical. It's not true. I think you have different radicalism. It's not necessarily an external influence. It can come even from inside the countries. So, and the revival, the Islamic revival, is not necessarily a bad thing. I never told this. I think it's natural for each country when a country opens the boundaries with abroad, it's natural to receive and to deal with the external and foreign influences.
Thank you, Bayram.
Then about the question of Madam about the spreading of Stalin Muslim
moderate.
model
moderate,
moderate. I believe that no need to do that because this Islam is everywhere in former Soviet Union. It already exists, and it is that just cultural something. And when we speak about religion in former Soviet Union sphere, just every time think that you have to speak about deep believers, those 15% of population, which are different from others, even by psychology. I'm sorry for that. Then about the good and bad Muslims, this obvious, the answer is obvious. If it's, let's say, authoritarian regime, then if you have in mosque the portrait of president, you are good Muslim. If not, then not. You are bad Muslim. And even in democratic country, if some mullahs or priests interfere in discussion and say, who will vote for Democrats, go to hell, of course they are bad Muslims. I'm joking, but government never wants uncontrolled activities. That's it. Then about the Azerbaijani, Israel, and Iranian issue, yes, there is. This is a point. And always Iran accuses Azerbaijan that Azerbaijan is pro-Israeli something, and there are many Israeli spies there, and so on, so on. Azerbaijan say, no, we don't, we're not. This accusation on killing Iranian scientists, this is just word, no evidence was there. But, of course, there is some cooperation between Israel and Azerbaijan, between their special some committees and forces and agencies, there is some. And Iran is not happy with this. As tension around Iran is growing, also this Iranian-Azerbaijani tension will be growing, as we see. Killing of Rafik Taghi, then repressions, then killing of the scientists, attempt to blast Israeli embassy, again the wave of arrests. That is the evidence of this tension. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, we'll have a break for 20 minutes and we'll resume to talk about North Caucasus, but join me in thanking our speakers.